Very spiky, isn't it? Full of spines. And then gradually, right on the edge of the spines, the more go. Until they're all going like this way, more and more and more and more, until it becomes soft and hairy, you see? And suddenly you've got what you'd call a vegetable. If you look at the watch, some people have extremely tick-tock watches. That is to say, they just have the hours marked with spots. There are even more simple watches than that. I've seen watches that simply have three, four spots on them, 12 and 6, 9 and 3. But on the other extreme, you can buy very expensive watches that have stopwatches on them and things that tell you the date and tachometers and all kinds of involved things. And this watch's calibrations will be getting more and more and more complicated all the way around. It begins to look like a flower. You see, it begins to look, what started out looking like a kind of a metallic object ends up looking like a vegetable or some kind of wonderful growing alive thing. Beyond some mysterious point of complexity, it seems to become alive. So this is what I mean by the spectrum. The various, let's say, games that are going on. The very, very firm at one end, and at the other end, all kinds of complicated mechanical, metric motions, rhythmic motions, that are so difficult to reduce to anything so simple as chum, chum, we say they're alive. Whereas the things at the other end that are very, very simple like that, you see, we say they are relatively inert. But whether you say that the inert is merely less alive, or whether you say that the alive is merely the maximum complexity of the inert, all depends on whether you want to say yes to the world or whether you want to say no. So it is, as it were, a yes saying that makes everything seem alive, a no saying that makes everything seem dead. And when you say no, and you make it all seem dead, what happens? You experience a very extreme form of differentiation between yourself on the one hand and everything that you experience on the other. Because if you want to put this world down and say it's all just a bunch of junk, you can't do that without isolating yourself from it. You've got to stand aside and be a completely independent observer, because if you say, therefore I too am just a lot of junk, and therefore this statement that I'm making is just a lot of junk, then obviously you can't expect anybody to lay very much credence upon it. But on the other hand, when you say, well, good gracious, this whole thing is something, isn't it? Then you put yourself into it. You don't stand aside from it any longer. You admit that you, too, are part of the whole thing, that your ego, yourself, is so inextricably involved with everything that you experience that there really ultimately isn't any difference between the kind of thing that's going on and you. Then you see, you've got a total system. You're one with it, you're not standing aside from it. But to make that clear, I just have to go into something that is puzzling for us whose thinking is based on sentence structure and of a kind of grammar that has subject, verb, and predicate, and a kind of mythology wherein we think of consciousness and being aware by analogy with photography and with mirrors reflecting images. If you can understand that what you are is everything that you know, there are, you see, a number, there are infinitely many ways of, oh, language ties us up. I was going to say, being conscious of what's going on. Each one of us looks at the present scene from a different point of view, but let me say, look at it like this. Supposing I say instead, each one of us is a different point of view with respect to this situation. You see, we can say, here's the situation, and each one of us, here's an eye, you see, looks at it from a different point of view. And so we go into it like this. Now, that's a very disintegrated picture. What is the connection between this and this? What's behind this? And where does all that come from? What's its relation to this, the situation? No, we are part of the situation. You can't deny that. So you see that the thing behind this is this, you see? See what I mean? You are not out of it. All right, then if that's the way it is, we've got to draw a different diagram altogether. Here's the situation again. Now, we talk about a point of view towards the situation, but can't you see that the situation grows out of itself, points of view, like this? See? And then, here they are. The little eyes in the end of it. You see, like a snail, but it is a big snail. That's with many, many eyes. See? So it looks at itself like that. Looks at itself through many eyes. But, so, in other words, what each one calls ourself is a point of view taken by what each one of us calls our experience. You get that? Isn't the experience, in other words, doesn't need really an experience and an experiencer. You don't need a thought, and then to have a thought you have to have a thinker, or to have a thinker then you can have a thought. All I'm introducing you to, you see, is really a simplified language. Do you feel a feeling? Or is feeling a feeling the same thing as feeling? It's easier, isn't it, to say feeling instead of feeling a feeling. There was a faith healer of Deal who said, though pain is not real, when the point of a pin goes into my skin, I dislike what I fancy I feel. Or that other limerick that some of you know that I made up. There was a young man who said, though it seems that I know that I know, what I would like to see is the eye that knows me when I know that I know that I know. This is what it is. So when you see that things, the physical world, and consciousness are inseparable. It isn't that the physical world is reflected in a mirror, but that it and consciousness are all one. But that consciousness seems to be something that is different from the world and looks at it, because it is done, focused, projected in so many different ways. And these are like the spikes coming out. See, you remember my fern thing, all right? We can play ferns with this. And we can start growing little ones out of here, you see. Or take any one of these and start going this, see. Take one of these and start doing this. See? All points of view growing out of the center. So then, remember that what you are experiencing, you can remember it, perhaps it's easier for some of you in this way. What you are seeing out there in front of you is actually a sensation inside your head. All that you see is a conversion of quanta in the external world into the form of your brain. Your brain in its turn being something in the external world. Now then, when it's in your brain, you say, and now I see it in terms of my brain. Well, is there somebody standing back inside your brain, you see, and looking at your brain and saying, well, there it is, what a nice picture. See, if you can get this, it's wonderful. The centers of the optic nerves are right in the back of your head. They're not just here. If they were just here, you could imagine someone standing inside your head and looking at them. But actually, they're right back there. So what you are seeing in front of your eyes is right back in here, where it's actually happening. So you can stroke the view here with your fingers, see? Now, there isn't somebody in the middle who's turned round looking at the back of your head, like the people in Plato's cave, to see what's out in front. The point is that the sensation of yourself and the sensation of other people is the same thing. And that's mutual between all of us, you see. We all are our view of other people and other things. Views of views. Views of viewings. And so, you don't have to introduce the problem of how the knower knows. How does the world make an impact on the knowing subject so that it can be aware of, be conscious of everything else? There isn't that kind of mirror or camera process going on. That's the important thing to understand, because everybody's thought is so powerfully influenced by the metaphors that he uses. And the metaphors for knowing and for consciousness, mirrors, cameras, etc., etc., can be extraordinarily introducing unnecessary complications. Simply see that what you are aware of in terms of external sensory experiences, in terms of so-called internal feelings, internal thoughts, that is what you are. Krishnamurti puts it so beautifully when he tries to show that behind the stream of thoughts there isn't a thinker. He says, you create the thinker, you create the thought of a thinker behind the thoughts in a moment of insecurity. When you want to withdraw, but actually, there is simply the stream of what you could call luminous experience. And you can translate, you can take away the word luminous and put the word conscious in its place. So see it again. Your heads, your nervous systems, your eyes, your senses, your bodies. Not as something that encounters the external environment from outside. You all are the external environment. Rather, your heads and eyes and so on are points, you see, put out by the environment as a whole, as a totality, through which it feels all around, like many sensitive hairs, like a sea urchin, with all those little spines coming out of it. And each one of us is one. Well, now, there is a final matter to be considered. I have given some seminars on Far Eastern aesthetics. And some of you may have attended some of them. When we talk about Chinese art as compared, say, with Mexican art or Cambodian art, we say it's naturalistic. On the other hand, these other art forms are highly stylized. What do we mean when we say an art form is more natural than another one? It's rather difficult to say, isn't it? Because you're trying to say that somehow or other, things that look like this are not as natural as things that look like this. What do you mean by that? What is natural somehow strikes us as being a little bit more asymmetrical, a little bit more wiggly than what we call artificial. Well, ever looked at sugar crystals under a microscope? Beautiful cubes. What about iron pyrites? All kinds of things in the crystal world. They look very formal, very stylized, very artificial. Go to the Charles Darwin Hall at the Museum of Natural History here and take a look at the glass models of Radiolaria. You have never seen anything so artificial. But my goodness, what a wow of artificiality. It's like looking at a master jeweler, Cellini beyond Cellini, has made baubles to hang around your neck, tiaras to put here, all kinds of gorgeous things. But this is the magic of nature. Really, go there. If it's open now, they were renewing it, but it is the most beautiful exhibition in New York. Makes all the painting look pretty silly. Living forms that are nevertheless absolute craftwork, master craftwork of jewelry. So you see, the point is, fundamentally, there is no such thing as an artificial work. All that happens is nature. All that happens is, however apparently artificial, still within the one domain. Once again, you see, we get a continuum. Everything in this continuum is nature, just like everything in a continuum is consciousness. But at one